Managing Everyday Problems for Spiritual Benefit. I chose that topic rather than some Vedantic topic. Once at a Vedanta center, the head of a Vedanta center was about to give a lecture on an abstruse topic of Vedanta, rather dry topic. And just before he started his lecture, he said, I have an announcement today, a special announcement. There will be a board meeting at the end of this lecture. So those who are on the board, please come to the library. Then at the end of the lecture, he went to the library and he found a man who he didn't recognize. He had never seen him before. So he said, I'm sorry, sir, but you have misunderstood my announcement. I had asked for only the board members to come. So this man replied, but I understood very well, and if there's anybody more bored than I am, I would like to meet him. So to avoid that sort of a problem, I thought I would give a more practical topic. An enlightened person doesn't depend on any person or anything for his happiness. But we, who are maybe not enlightened, we want to live a spiritual life. But there are problems. Now, how can problematic situations help us spiritually? This is our problem today. Now, you need not run away from relatives and friends. You can love them all you like. In fact, it is the problems and people in all situations that give us the chance to develop self-control, patience, perseverance, and other spiritual virtues. Now, I'll tell you 5 ways to get spiritual benefit from everyday problems. 1, learn detachment by convincing yourself through reasoning. 2, give up the sense of I and mine. Not so simple. 3, live in the present. 4, create a positive state of mind by which you can tell yourself that whatever happens is for your good. And the 5th is offer everything to the Lord. Now, what happens to ordinary people? They are constantly elated or depressed by what situations they find themselves in. Well, it's a myth. What is happening to you cannot depress you. It is your interpretation of what is happening to you that depresses you. If anybody calls you and asks, you can say, sorry, there's something wrong with your eyes. I think you need to see an optician. Of course, if you are an S, then there's no problem. Why should someone else's problem become your problem? For most people, having no problem is happiness, and having a problem is unhappiness. People live their lives with this ignorance. The secret of being happy, in spite of having problems, very simply said, is to separate emotion from experience. It is being a witness. I experience someone scolding me. Somebody praises me. Can't I just experience it? Somebody criticizes me. Can't I just experience someone criticizing me? Only experience of what is happening and be neither elated or depressed by it. For most people, let's see a group of people who are members of one situation, I can give you an example. A group of people who are members of a choir were having their choir practice on a stage. And in one corner of a stage, a mechanic came and started hammering at the stage, repairing it. Well, all during the choir practice, the leader of the choir started glaring. Every time there was some hammering noise, he started glaring at the mechanic. At the end of the choir practice, everybody stopped singing. The carpenter looked at the leader of the choir and said, "Sir, continue your practice. It's not disturbing me." Now, Swamiji was very fond of a devotee in California, Alice Mead, and she did a lot of service for Swamiji. He appreciated that, but he would often get impatient with her, and he scolded her a lot. I think he scolded her maximum. He once said to her, "Mother brings me fools to work with." And then he scolded her so much that she became scold-proof. They told me that I became scold-proof also. One day, he suddenly said, "You are a silly, brainless fool. That's what you are." He went on scolding her for some time when Miss Aspinall came into the room. Suddenly, she walked into the room. And Alice said to Swamiji, Swamiji then stopped scolding. And Alice said to Swamiji, "Swamiji, don't mind Miss Aspinall. You just go on. If you're not finished, you just carry on." She was so detached. She was so detached that she could separate emotions from experience. People are confused when they hear the word detachment. They feel they have to run away from the world. A friend of a guru left his house, bundled up his luggage, and went to his guru and said, "Oh, Gurudev, tell me where I can find peace. Where can I go to find peace?" The guru immediately snatched that fellow's luggage and started running away. He ran as fast as he could through all the streets of the city, and this fellow started running after him. And all his clothes and belongings were in that luggage. So the guru ran so fast and through all these by lanes, and he knew the city very well, so this fellow, he just couldn't catch him. And at last, the guru came back to where he started and put down the luggage beside him. Well, the friend came panting up behind him, and when he saw him sitting there with his luggage, he immediately came and grabbed his luggage and said, "Oh, I've got my clothes back. I've got my clothes back." The guru said, "Here is peace." What gave him peace? He had the clothes before, and now he has the same clothes again. What gave him peace was that he now accepted the situation. We're constantly forming opinions, judging, evaluating, adding meanings to situations and things. And we find fault not only with people, but with all the things we see. Now, what they are themselves does not disturb us, but it's again that interpretation that disturbs us. In fact, withholding opinions will help us a lot in spiritual life. When I joined the mud, I used to tell my, because I came from here into a Bengali culture, and that also of a rather medieval Bengali culture in the mud. So things were very different. But I kept telling myself, "No, don't form opinions. Don't form opinions." And it really helped me a lot. Now, once there was an abbot of a Buddhist monastery, and he was very popular and very much revered by his congregation. Well, he gave very good talks. And one Sunday morning, he started his talk very hesitatingly. He said, "Well, I don't know how I can tell you this. It's going to be difficult. You see, though I'm a monk, I spent the very best moments of my life, the most precious moments of my life, in the arms of a beautiful woman. And she embraced me and kissed me and caressed me, and we spoke such sweet words to one another. Well, his congregation was shocked. They were looking at one another through the corner of their eye and covering their open mouths. And then he said, before they started to get up and leave, he said, "That woman was my mother, and I was a small child." You see how immediately we start forming opinions. We don't know half of what's going on. We don't know what samskaras people have, yet we judge them. So I thought this was a very good example. Now, we come to the second way to get spiritual benefit from everyday problems. And that is by giving up the sense of I and mine, the sense of possession and possessiveness. Well, in India, there are markets where domestic animals are sold, you know, cows and goats and other farm animals, buffaloes, and I have seen that sort of market. And there, a farmer went one day to purchase a cow. Well, he looked over the cows and he found a nice, healthy cow. And he paid his money and started for home along the road with his cow on tether. Well, there was an accident on the way, and the cow died. Well, who do you think will feel worse about the situation? The man who sold the cow, who nourished it and groomed it and looked after it for 2 years, or the man who just bought it 15 minutes ago? The man who bought it 15 minutes ago felt worse. Why? Because he knew that it was his cow. The other man had given up that cow. It was out of his mind. But this man thought, now this is my cow, so it was his loss. So, see, a cow doesn't know what a human being is. Of course, it recognizes a human being, but it doesn't know what it is to be a human being. Cow is a lot like a human in that respect. Didn't get it. So, the Buddha, you know this story probably. The Buddha was traveling with his disciple Ananda, and they went to a few houses for begging. In one house, the lady opened the door and she said, "You parasites, why don't you work for a living? Why do you live off the people? Now, aren't you ashamed of yourself, you parasites?" And then she slammed the door, and the Buddha just walked away. But Ananda got very upset. Someone insulted his guru. So after a few minutes, he said to the Buddha, "Look, I'm coming back in a few minutes. I'll just come back. Just wait." Then the Buddha said, "Ananda, don't go. You just forget it." Then Ananda, he couldn't forget it. He was so upset. Well, he went. And he went to that. He said, "I'm going to go to that lady and give her a piece of my mind. She called you a parasite." Then the Buddha said, "Please, Ananda, come along." Then he gave Ananda his kamandalu. He said, "Hold my kamandalu, my water pot." Then Ananda took it from him and started carrying it. Then the Buddha asked him, "Well, Ananda, whose kamandalu is that?" Ananda said, "Why, it's yours." Then The Buddha said, "Well, Ananda, I'm very proud of you. You're such a good disciple, so faithful. I'm giving you that Kamandalu as a gift." And Ananda was very happy to have this Kamandalu for himself. Very precious to have the Buddha's Kamandalu. Then a few minutes later, the Buddha asked Ananda, "Well, Ananda, whose Kamandalu is that?" "Oh." Ananda said, "Why, it's my Kamandalu." Then the Buddha said, "How can that be? 2 minutes ago you said it's your Kamandalu, the Buddha's Kamandalu. Now you're saying it's yours." "But yes," Ananda said, "you gifted it to me." He said, "Okay. Now that lady, if I don't accept what she has given me, then to whom does it belong?" "Well, it belongs to her." "So that she called me a parasite, I didn't accept that. I didn't accept the insult. So to whom does it belong? It belongs to her alone." In that way, we can consider that what people say to us, if we don't accept it, if it's not true, then why get upset about it? So we have to learn to live with a positive attitude. Now, you think that your mind is yours. Look at most of your ideas, your language. Your language is what you learn from someone else. So is it yours now? You have your own brain, but you didn't create that brain. You found it. Your body is not yours. You didn't manufacture it. You may say that flat in Rajarhat is mine. You're a trustee, not a possessor. When the arrogance goes away, then you can begin to feel gratitude. When the I goes, this ego sense goes, then the mental fever is also cured. The ego is the cause of most of our problems. What is ego? Did anybody tell you that? E-G-O, edging God out. Rabindranath Tagore once wanted to compose a poem. Well, he thought the best situation, most poetic situation, where he could feel in a creative mood. He sat in a boat on the Ganga in the evening. He lit a candle and opened his notebook. Then he was about to write. No ideas. Nothing came. For a long time he sat there, not a single thought. Just no poetry. At last, he put out the candle, and then suddenly he saw how beautiful the moonlight was on the water. Because he put out that little candle, he could see the moonlight on the water, how it was reflected in so many waves, and the beauty of the scenery around him immediately made him feel like composing a poem, and he was able to compose something. So if we put out this little ego, this little I, then we see the whole expanse. We see an expanded view. Now, people expect that problems should disappear. If you're married, you have one set of problems. If you're not married, you have another set of problems. If you have children, and if you do not have children, you have problems. Problems are bound to be there. The poet Wordsworth wondered in his Ode to Immortality why a child should waste so much time learning to be an adult when adults feel the loss of their childhood. There's a lot of difference between growing old and aging. Aging is adding years to your life. and growing is adding life to your years. By spirituality, you can grow and expand. There's a story of a man who had so many problems. Poor fellow, he went to a shoe shop to buy a pair of shoes. Well, his foot measured size 9, and he chose a pair of shoes of size 7. The shoe salesman told him, "Look, this is not going to be right for your foot. Please see there are plenty of shoes size 9. "No," he said, "I want this shoe." "But why?" "Oh, don't ask me. You just take my money and give me the shoes." "But sir, please tell me why it is you want a shoe of size 7 when you measure size 9. "Oh," he said, "you don't know. I have so many problems. My boss treats me like dirt, and my wife is always nagging me at home. There's no escape. I get these small size shoes. When I put them on, I feel so much pain in my feet. I can't think of anything else. The whole day I'm suffering from so much pain. I think only of the pain in my feet, and all the problems disappear. And at night, when I take them off to go to bed, oh, such relief." Of course, if we get a very big problem, it kind of overwhelms the other problems. Now, our biggest problem is that we react because we haven't mastered our minds. The human problem is a problem of conflict. If one does not learn the art of relieving conflict, there will be uneasiness or disease. Therefore, the human problem is to solve this conflict within oneself. Animals have no such conflict because they have no choice. They don't have to choose between vegetarian and non-veg. They don't have to choose between getting married or not getting married, to attend a lecture or not attend a lecture. Behind the element of choice, there is the element of desire. Desire pressurizes the choices. The more you go on fulfilling desires, the greater the number of desires come up. Because the root is fundamental desire. You cut the branches, but as long as the root is there, the branches continue to grow. There was once, in a village in India, there was once an announcement. Where that announcement was coming from, they couldn't understand. But a voice was saying again and again throughout the day, "Pack up all your worries and troubles. Pack them up in an imaginary bag and take them to the other side of the lake. Then when you get to the other side of the lake, empty your bag of imaginary troubles," of course, imaginary bag, of imaginary troubles and problems, "and then fill it up with all the things you would want to have, and take it back to the side of the lake." Now, you have to do this all before midnight. So the people, they were laughing. "What a ridiculous thing. We can't do that. Are we fools?" But the announcement kept on going on the whole day. And at last, some of them said, "Let's try it. We have nothing to lose. We'll go and do it." Okay, then they decided, a number of them, most of them, they decided that they will do it. But then they told this fellow who was sitting under a tree, "Why don't you also pack up your worries in an imaginary bag?" This fellow under the tree said, "No, I'm perfectly all right as I am. I'm perfectly happy without doing anything." Then they all said, no, let's try it. Let's try it." So many of them did this. They packed up an imaginary bag full of their troubles and worries, and went to the other side of the lake at midnight. And when they came back, they found that really this miracle happened. And when they came back, they saw beautiful houses that they wanted, the things that they liked to have in it. They were just amazed. This really happened. And they told the man who was sitting under the tree, "Oh, see how foolish you were. You could have had a five-star ashram. Now, just see." The man said, "No, I'm perfectly all right as I am." But they were all so happy. They were overjoyed that they got all these things that they wanted. One man had such a beautiful house, but then it didn't last. After a few minutes, one man saw his neighbor's house. Well, his neighbor's house was a much better design than his house. Now, why didn't he ask for that design? And so they began to find some fault or other with what they got. And that's how it is. Desires just never end. Now, a rasagola is a source of happiness for one person. But someone who has diabetes, it's unhappiness. For one person, smoking is happiness. For another, it's cancerous and allergic. One wants to get rid of his wife, and another, his neighbor, is waiting to marry that very wife. So there is no object which you can say that happiness comes from. What happiness comes from, that happiness comes from objects, that's a myth. It's a dog's logic. How is it a dog's logic? In the course of his teaching, the Saint Ramana Maharshi, he used to say that happiness does not belong to the world of objects. Well, one person heard this and objected. He said, "I can't accept this." Then Ramana Maharshi gave an example. He said, a dog was eating a dry bone. The dog was chewing the bone and enjoying it. And gradually, the sharp end of the bone pierced the dog's jaw, and blood started coming out. So the dog thought that the blood is coming from the bone. So even more, he was chewing that bone, the more the blood came, the more ravenously he chewed that bone. So, it was becoming a real disaster, blood all over. And then the dog's guru at last had compassion. The dog's guru came, and he told him, "Look, that blood, it's coming from within you. It's not coming from the bone." The dog couldn't believe it. He laughed. He said, "What? What do you mean? Before I started chewing the bone, there was no blood. When I started chewing the bone, there was blood. So, after I came in contact with the bone, only blood came. And so that means blood came from the bone." Now, people who say that happiness comes from objects is having that dog's logic. We create a problem for ourselves by being insincere, by cheating ourselves. When driving a car, if you step on the brake and the accelerator at the same time, what happens? The car can't go forward and the engine gets heated up. So you'll ruin the car. If people practice self-control, putting on the brake, but continue nourishing their values in their minds because of ignorance, they press the accelerator and the brake at the same time. So they get into a turmoil. Sri Ramakrishna said, if you've given up eating fish, then why are you hanging around the fish market? So now the third means to spiritual benefit from problems is to live in the present. Now, how that works. When you are in the mood of hope, hoping this will happen, hoping that will happen, hoping the children will succeed, and hoping your work will be fruitful, hoping your relatives won't demand anything. When you are in the hope mode, where are you? Are you in the present or in the future? When you are in the future, the present is not available. Life opens up only in the present. If you are programmed to look into the past and the future, as most of us are, you will never remain in the domain of the present unless you learn to change your ability to enjoy what is happening now. When the future comes, your mind will again go to the future. Then you go on missing the present. You miss life. Therefore, death becomes a painful experience because we never lived properly. A person worries that now he's making a lot of profit, but whether his children will maintain that empire, that's a matter of worry. He spent all his life's energy building it up, but maybe his children won't continue it. So he gets depressed now. What's the idea? A Zen master was about to die. A Zen master was about to die, and some disciples came and asked, "Oh, master, would you give us a last teaching of Zen?" The master said, "I will tell you. I will tell you. Please give me a piece of cake." They gave him a piece of cake, and he ate it, and he said, "Ah, this cake was so delicious," and he died. Well, that was the final teaching. What was that teaching? Even a small act, like eating a cake with awareness of the present moment, becomes delicious. Life becomes delicious. Everything should be fun, or there's something wrong. If your life is not fun, if what you're doing is not enjoyable, something wrong with it. Or there's something wrong with you. If you don't enjoy what you are doing now, you will postpone it. You will procrastinate. You will go on procrastinating. People postpone actions because they're boring. Never lose your enthusiasm. Hold on to it. We are like the elephants trained in captivity. How are elephants trained in captivity, you know? The baby elephant is tied by a chain to a stake in the ground. So it can only go the radius of that chain, just as far as that chain will allow. But what happens when the baby elephant grows up? He's still kept in the same way, tied by a chain to a stake in the ground. But the grown-up elephants, they're so big and strong, they can easily tear out that stake from the ground and go off. But they don't. Why don't they? Do you know why they don't? They're conditioned from their babyhood to go round only as far as that chain goes. So we are like that. That was the point. We are like that. Now, worrying is like a rocking chair. It keeps you moving, but you don't get anywhere. When we are worrying, what should we do? Tell yourself that worrying is going to drain my energy. Concentrate on the action, and the result will come. We see the futility of it, but still we worry. By habit, we worry. So we have to break this habit pattern. What is a habit? Habit, H-A-B-I-T. You take off the first two letters and you get bit. Bit by bit, you form a habit. And bit by bit, you change a habit. Now, we come to the fourth means to spiritual benefit from everyday problems, and that is to consider that whatever happens is for my good. There's a story for that too. A king and his minister went out hunting. In an encounter with a lion, the king was able to kill the lion, but before he died, the lion bit off the thumb of the king. For that, the king became very depressed. My thumb is gone. When the king lost the thumb, his minister, who had studied Vedanta, said to him, "Oh, Maharaj, whatever happens is for your good." Now, this was not the right time to say that. There are certain things you should say, seeing the time, place, and circumstances. But you see, like if your neighbor's wife has become a widow, and you go to her and say, "It's for your own good that this has happened," she will suspect you have some intentions. Anyway, this foolish minister had told the truth. The king got so annoyed that he caught hold of the minister and threw him into a well nearby. Fortunately, the well didn't have much water in it. But still, he was stuck in the well. Anyway, the king cursed him and walked off. He went through the forest and came to another village. And as he came to the other village, a group of Kali worshippers grabbed him. They caught hold of him, and while they were tying him up, he protested. He said, "I'm the king of the nearby kingdom." He said, "Oh, so much the better. Mother will be pleased by such an offering." So the next day, the chief priest came with a sword to cut off the head of the king and offer the blood to Kali. Well, suddenly the chief priest, he saw that the king's finger was cut. The priest exclaimed, "There's a dosha in the prasad. There's a defect in the offering. Release this offering, because goddess Kali will get angry if there is no purnahuti. It must be full, not a defective one." So they released the king. The king was relieved. He thought, if his thumb had not been cut, his head would have been cut. So he ran back to the minister to ask his forgiveness. So he went to the minister, he pulled him out of the well, and he said, "Oh, forgive me, you were right, what happened was for my good." And the minister said, "Don't ask for forgiveness. What happened was for my good also. If you hadn't thrown me in the well, I would have been the perfect prasad for that sacrifice." So whatever happens is for our good. Now, you have to develop a positive state of mind. Did you observe when people are unhappy, they constantly focus on what is missing? So they can never be content. There may be infinite things you don't have, but there are also infinite things that you do have. If you focus on what is missing, you will always be unhappy. There is a doha of Kabir which says, the waves are searching for the ocean. The cloth is searching for the cotton thread. The individual is searching for the blissful Lord. All three are great fools. The wave itself is the ocean. The cloth itself is cotton thread. And the individual himself is bliss. Why are you not experiencing bliss? It is because your mind is agitated. Why is the mind agitated? It's agitated because you're living an egocentric life. And why are you egocentric? It is because you do not love. The fifth means to spiritual benefit from problems is to offer everything to God. Now, whatever I do, I offer to the Lord. If I'm cleaning a room, I'm offering it to the Lord. If I'm taking a bath, I offer it to the Lord. You may say, I don't know the Lord, so how can I offer actions to him? I may say so, but have you seen your great-great-grandfather? Yet you know he existed. But we have to offer with sincerity. You see, we can't cheat. Simply say that we are offering, but do not do so with love. Because if you're giving something, you're giving with love. And why don't we give with love? It's because we feel that by giving, we are losing. So we cheat others and we cheat ourselves. Now, there was a man who had a flat in the city, and the flat was invaded with mice. So he thought, I have to do something about these mice. He got a mouse trap. He put the mouse trap in the kitchen, and before he went to bed, he opened the fridge to get a piece of cheese to put in the trap. There was no cheese in the fridge. What to do? At this time of night, there won't be any shop open. What will I do? He saw there's a magazine nearby. In that magazine, there was a picture of a piece of cheese. Well, then he thought, mice are not intelligent, after all. He cut the picture and put it in the trap. Now, he thought, okay, let's see what happens. He went to bed, and next morning he got up. First thing, he ran into the kitchen. Well, from a distance, he could see there's something in that mousetrap. Ha! Huh, there's a mouse in the mousetrap. He fell for it. He went nearby the trap. He was about to open it and he saw it was a cut-out picture of a mouse. So we have to be careful not to cheat. Not to cheat ourselves or the Lord. Okay. So these are the five means of facing everyday problems as disciplines for our spiritual benefit. 1, learn to be detached by convincing yourself through reasoning. Get rid of the sense of I and mine. Live in the present. Create a positive state of mind, telling yourself that whatever happens is for your good. And offer everything to the Lord. Now, here, a magazine picture won't do the trick. We can't cut out a picture of God and paste it on our hearts. We apparently offer, but without effect, because we don't put our loving gratitude behind it. How to love? Well, we learn to swim by getting in the water. Most of our prayers are for reforming God, not ourselves. We think we have to remind him again and again. Do you think he's deaf? He came to this earth because he loves us. If you would realize that, you would offer everything you do with loving gratitude, and your problems would become insignificant.